talk to me just a little bit more about the anti-Semitism and, you know, the protests on college campuses now. And
I'll start with something my father told me for years as I was growing up, because my father survived the Holocaust. I mean, his family left in 1938 from Poland. He was 4 years old. And just his father, his mother, and one sister left. And fortunately was able to come to Argentina. America had closed its borders. And my father, despite his love for this country and despite what he was seeing in America, always said it can happen here. And me growing up pretty much an American, you know, I came to this country, I was 2 and a half, never experiencing anti-Semitism. I was the only kid in my school in Portland, Oregon, and never felt anything but love and respect, tolerance, and appreciation. I always pushed back on that. I said, Dad, America's different. And in the last political cycle, we started seeing the rise of anti-Semitism from the right in Charlottesville, for example. And my dad said, you see. And I remember I said, Dad, that's a small element. It's on one side. And now it's happening on the side that I kind of find myself closest aligned to, and that is the more moderate or left of center. And it's very jarring. People that we have worked together on many issues. And again, it's not even so much people that are pro-Palestinian. I consider myself pro-Palestinian. I want there to be two states for two peoples. It's not the ceasefire, because I want there to be a bilateral ceasefire, one that has the immediate release of the hostages and the immediate and overwhelming amount of humanitarian aid going into Gaza. But it's the virulent hate of not just Israel, but the Jewish people, Zionism, which is nothing more than the belief in the Jewish people having a right to self-determination. I believe in Palestinians having the right to self-determination. But to categorize that as Nazism, to hear that Jews are nothing more or nothing different than the Nazis, to equate what is admittedly a very difficult campaign that is going on in Gaza with thousands that are dead, but to equate that with genocide, which by every metric and every definition is false. But to use the same words that Jews, as you said, have experienced is kind of heartbreaking, because we're seeing it in a country that should be different. And I'm finding myself going back to my father, who's just turned 90 just a few months ago, and saying, Dad, I still think America is different, but I am starting to understand what you
see. You see the cracks. You see the – I understand what you're – I agree with you. I hope America is different. But I also know, because of Kent State and the civil rights protests of the 60s and in the early 70s and all that, that some days it feels like we're just a step away from going down a slippery slope.
Yeah. And it's so easy for the slippery slope to occur, because it is so easy to veer off into the far lanes of conversation. Because there's actually quite a few people, at least I see that in my conversations, of people that understand that this is complicated and can hold both Palestinians and Israelis together in the same arm embrace and understand the struggles of both. There's a lot of people out there, but the louder voices that are screaming, kill all Palestinians, all Israelis are Nazis when they need to be removed. Those voices have the largest amount of oxygen out there. And we just need to be able to talk with one another. And that's, unfortunately, that's become one of the casualties of what's happened the last 7 months. And that is the inability of both the Jewish community and the Muslim community to have those good conversations that we used to have. For Christians, Jews, and Muslims to be together in an ability to share each other's struggles, and for Christians who understand the complexity to be able to hold both of us.
Last question for you, but you said your whole family's here. You've got a grandson I know you're very proud of. Do you feel uncomfortable yourself?
Actually, you know, in West Virginia, I've never had any fears. There are, unfortunately, we hear throughout the country people that are afraid to wear a yarmulke, a head covering, in public, which again feeds into that narrative that my dad mentioned to me growing up. You know, America, it could happen here. The fact that Jews in New York, in some large cities, feel and ask the legitimate question whether they should wear a yarmulke in the, on the subway. I don't feel that at all here in West Virginia. But I do feel sadness that what we've built here, especially in our community, and I'm coming to the end of my career here, one of the things I'm very proud of is the ability of the experiment of interfaith curiosity, that we can come together, Jews, Muslims, Christians, people of different faiths, people of no faith, and we can come and create this oasis of understanding. And what we see in the last 6.5 months is that separation, that inability to have those good conversations. I think it will come once there is a ceasefire, once the hostages are returned, once there is some level, some cessation of violence, some ability to begin the discussions again. But that's what saddens me right now. I'm not afraid personally. I'm afraid because that's really been the most beautiful element of what's happened here in West Virginia, and particularly in Charleston, is the interfaith community has always been able to grow together. And right now that growth is stagnant at best. And I'm afraid if it continues, some of those roots that we've established are going to be pulled out.
I mean, I guess ultimately these were friends of yours. The people from these other, they are friends to you. They're not just an imam or a, you know, Christian preacher or whatever. They're, and those friendships are being severed.
They're just not occurring. I mean, I think what's happening is people are not talking to each other because we don't have the bridges that we had before. We've had these issues. Not like the Palestinian-Israeli situation is something that just came up on October 7th.
No.
I mean, this situation has been going, and I have been involved in the U.S.-Israel relationship since I became a rabbi in my 20s. And yet, we learned how to find the commonalities, and we learned how to speak around the difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always happened until recently. And I think we just have to refigure out the travel patterns. Some very beautiful things happened. Last week was a great example. We did a Root in the Branch where it was a member of the Catholic community, the imam and myself, and a member of the Latter-day Saints who moderates the discussion. And we talked about, not the Middle East, we talked about passages in our sacred texts and how we each look at them. And people afterwards came up and said it was just refreshing. It was so nice to see a rabbi and a mom together. And not that we have any tension, but just that visual back again. And I think we need to work on that again. And, you know, I share some of the blame. We need to figure out how to do that, and I haven't figured that out yet. That's a failing on my part. But I think that's critical, and that's what I'm worried about in the future, because the longer we stay separate, the more unhealthy this community becomes.